Tonight, we look at one of the most influential media franchises of all time. Don't be a fucking Patak. Watch Star Trek get deep. Fat motherfucking fried!
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Aw, yeah.
What an intro.
Whoever
cut that intro together was truly a master editor.
I know, right?
Truly a master of his craft.
Brilliant. I like how the Deep Fat Fried logo came in from the side and
it came in,
meandered its way.
It came in from where the explosion, where the fucking Enterprise, you know, disappears from. I mean, he had an eye for detail, whoever that editor was.
Look, I know editors, brilliant
editor.
I'm
telling editor. You, that is a genuinely brilliant piece of modern media.
I have to agree, I guess.
Holy shit.
I'm contractually obligated to agree with you, so I agree.
Yeah. So, a lot of people in the chat have noticed that we're a little bit late.
Well, we considered being early, but why break precedence?
Well, actually, Hugo and Jake were supposed to be on tonight, and we did everything in our power to make that happen, but it turns out that it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
We're experimenting with Wirecast now, because you can actually bring people in without Skype.
We had a nice little setup here, but Skype done fucking raped it.
So
in
fuck
the
you,
asshole.
Skype.
So whatever. We're going to figure out a better way than Skype to do this. Maybe we're going to switch to Wirecast.
They did say
like
they would come back on a future episode.
They said they'd come back next Friday.
Cool.
Which hopefully by then we can have these issues worked out.
So sorry, Hugo and Jake fans.
Thanks to them
we really tried.
Big apology to Hugo and Jake, who waited on the line with us for 40 minutes as we tried to get shit together. Everybody go show them some love.
Yeah.
Go fucking over a subscriber.
Yeah, go pass them some props. Go wash their balls nice and sparkly, fucking clean.
So, yeah, we're sorry about that, but, you know, this is the first live episode, and right now there's 666 people watching,
awesome.
So that
seems like a good omen. Oh, yeah.
Perfect number, dude.
Does seem like a good omen. So, tonight we're here to talk about Star Trek.
Greatest series of all time, or greatest series of all time? Inquiring minds want to know.
Paul is going to be playing the part of the villain tonight.
Yeah, because I don't really like Star Trek. I mean, I like it, but I don't really like it, you know what I mean? You probably don't, but I'll explain myself, dude.
What a piece of
You'll shit. Understand.
TJ is going to play the captain.
We don't like to do too much shilling on this show because it reminds us too much of another show we were on.
Whatever, TJ, you love the show.
But we do have a Patreon. We've already got, I think, 200 people have signed up for it, something like that. What's happening is, as of March 1st, all these Friday episodes are going to go be patrons only things. We're only going to do the Monday episodes as a public episode, and you have the rest of this month and all of next month to figure out whether or not you want to be a patron of this show or not. Won't hurt our feelings if you choose not to, just our wallets. That's pretty much it. We got our Patreon. It's linked to down below. You can make your own decisions.
Also, whatever. If you want to listen, there's links below.
Oh, yeah.
Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher or SoundCloud or whatever bullshit you like to listen to shit on.
Yeah, we got a bunch of audio links down there. A bunch of new ones coming soon. Let's start with some basic facts about the fucking creator of Star Trek, Gene fucking Roddenberry.
Good old Gene.
The man.
Gene, the greatest optimist that ever lived, Roddenberry.
The greatest optimist that ever lived.
He was.
In some ways, I would say so. But
100%.
In other ways, not.
His version of the future is the ultimate optimistic outcome for humanity.
But in the Star Trek universe, there is a lot of tumultuous times that get to that point. So
of course.
It's not all just, you know, roses and sunshine, is what I'm saying. But yeah, I mean...
So
the culmination, sure.
Here's this fuck right here. There he is.
Look at him.
What a stud.
Smiling idiot, filled to the brim with optimism.
He was born Does anyone know where Gene Roddenberry was born?
El Paso, Texas.
That's correct. El Paso, Texas, August 19th, 1921. Caroline Glenn Roddenberry and Eugene Edward Roddenberry. He spent most of his childhood in Los Angeles. His father was a World War I veteran and a police officer whom he described as a bigoted Texan.
Wow.
Gene Roddenberry had no love for his daddy. Still, he had a begrudging respect for his father, who, self-taught and stemming from a dirt-poor background, possessed a keen intellect and an uncanny ability to see things to come. And only shortly before his father's death, Roddenberry came to see his father in a new light, ironically, through Star Trek.
Wow.
So, you know, typical father-son relationship.
I was going to say, if he was born in Texas, I don't think, like, a true Texan that grew up in Texas would birth an idea like Star Trek. So it makes sense that he spent most of his childhood in L.A.
His mother, on the other hand, was a devout Baptist and dragged young Roddenberry and his younger siblings, Bob and Doris, to each and every religious gathering she was able to.
Bob Roddenberry. That's a great name.
I'm Bob Roddenberry.
Sucks. Here, buddy. My name's Bob Roddenberry.
Of course he was raised in a religious household. I mean, so he didn't necessarily possess the background you would expect for Star Trek, but maybe in some ways you would expect that to come from that.
Did Bob Roddenberry sell RVs?
I don't know.
Hey, everybody, come on down to Bob Roddenberry's RV Superstore, and I'll hook you up with the best camper you ever done saw. It's a Roddenberry camper.
I was going to say, Paul, we didn't really research Bob Roddenberry for this.
I wish we should have. We should have found out, man.
Apparently, it was because of his mother's devout Baptist bullshit that he became an atheist, and he developed his anti-religious worldviews.
So she pushed a little too hard in one direction and he went the other.
Sometimes that does happen.
Yeah, that happens a lot, actually. A lot of them atheist types are...
I was going to say, they tried to get TJ to, you know, to be a fucking straight man, but he's turned out to be such a faggot. So, you know, I mean, sometimes you push too hard in one direction, you end up with TJ.
Did you guys ever get dragged to church?
Yeah.
You did?
Not many times, though. Not as bad as most people that had religious upbringings.
I was in the same boat. Every once in a while I had to go to do some church thing, but it wasn't every week.
Yeah, every once in a while Jesus shit, like, you believe in Jesus, right?
Yeah.
I
want to read you guys a great Gene Roddenberry quote here.
Sure.
This is wonderful. I had insisted on half women on board the Enterprise. The network came to me and said, you can't have half women. Our people say it will make it look like a ship with all sorts of mad sexual things going on, whoa, half men and half women.
Too much pussy around.
So we argued about it like a poker game, and they finally said, okay, we'll settle for one-third women. I figured one-third women could take care of the males anyway.
Wow. Sexually or?
Whoa. Yeah, sexually.
Wow. I mean, that's true.
Well, I mean, if you're on a starship and you're in the middle of fucking space, of course you're going to be fucking. The crew's going to be fucking like crazy.
All right, and just to summarize his optimistic outlook that Paul probably has issue with, here's his little optimism quote. Almost all of this comes out of my feeling that the human future is bright. We're just beginning. We have wonders ahead of us to see. I don't see how it can be any other way with the way the future is going. We now have got a telescope up there. We're photographing the universe. We're inventing the next life form, which is the computer. We're in the midst of it, and it will happen.
Yeah, and more people know about Logan Paul finding a dead body in the suicide forest than that telescope nowadays.
That's true.
So, checkmate, Gene Roddenberry. Sorry. I don't see our trajectory heading down that same road. I see more division. I see more war, more strife, more bullshit. I don't see us ever going like, you know what? We probably ought to work together as a species. Stop all this bullshit. I don't really see that. It's like something humanity has as in its capacity.
But Paul, you know, in fairness to Gene Roddenberry, I mean, that's never really been your... I don't think you've ever really been an optimist. I don't think you can really see it from the other perspective. I think, you know, in a way, you're kind of set in your ways as well.
I mean,
like,
sure.
Whereas you see him as the, you know, the... Just a total typical optimist, always seeing the best in the future, seeing like, look, there's a lot of bright possibilities. And some people see the world that way, and obviously...
See, if he'd have said that, I would agree. There are some bright possibilities in our future, but he said, I don't see how it could be any other way. This is where Star Trek came from. It came from my idea, like, You look at technology now, this is the way it's going to go.
But that's the show he's selling. He's not going to go like, you know, this is total fucking science fiction. I think.
I mean, he could have said something like, oh, you know, this is like what I hope for humanity.
But, you know, there was such a strong connection with Star Trek fans and the creator of the show. I mean, it's almost like any unlike any other fan base, really. And this is kind of the original convention-going fan base. You know, so there's like, so a lot of times these quotes, I think, are pulled from times where he's speaking directly to this fan base.
Sure.
You know, so I think it's also... You know, he's really trying to get them on board with the show and the property and the franchise.
I mean, I really got the idea that this was, like, watching the Star Treks that I watched, I got the idea that this was Gene Roddenberry's vision
for
the way things were going to be.
An idealist dream, I would say, right. Yeah.
And I just disagree with him, I guess. I mean, I don't know.
Roddenberry put together a very progressive show. Roddenberry intended the show to have a progressive political agenda reflective of the emerging counterculture of the youth movement, though he was not fully forthcoming to the networks about this. He wanted Star Trek to show humanity what it might develop into if it would learn from the lessons of the past, most specifically by ending violence. An extreme example is the alien species, the Vulcans, who have had a violent past but learned to control their emotions. Roddenberry also gave Star Trek an anti-war message and depicted the United Federations of Planets as an ideal, optimistic version of the United Nations. His efforts were opposed by the network because of concerns over marketability. E.g., they opposed Roddenberry's insistence that the Enterprise have a racially diverse crew.
See, this is just proof that, I mean, this is what we all know, right? That TV studios don't have a fucking idea what people actually want.
No.
Well,
I mean, look, you're talking about people being peaceful. Like, networks really, especially in that time, didn't really want that. They didn't want, like, a terrible overt violence, but no war, no like, fighting. You know what I mean? That doesn't really jive with
people,
what they want.
People flying around exploring space.
Especially with science fiction being where it was before Star Trek. I mean, Star Trek was obviously still pretty campy, but it was a lot less campy than a lot of the 50s and 60s sci-fi products.
Let me show you one of the fucking defining moments of the original Star Trek series, actually television's very first interracial kiss.
Whoa. Sexy.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so frightened, Captain.
Don't be frightened.
Yeah, Michelle Nichols, bring those big juicy lips over here, baby.
Makes them think that they're alive.
Give Daddy Kirk some sugar. Got jungle fever, baby. Come on now.
Oh yeah, dude, he's got a bone right now. He's all like, if it's in the script.
Spock
kiss.
Is a horrible kisser.
God, he is. Just do it.
Well, they're being forced to kiss against their will by telepathic beings.
I'm thinking of all the times on the Enterprise when I was scared to death.
Oh wow.
Come on.
So man, this is so taboo.
I can't believe this is about to happen.
Ebony and ivory together in perfect. Come on. Plant one on her, Kirk. She
Kirk,
wants
come on.
It so bad. Look at her.
She wants the D, dude.
She needs it bad.
Give her the kiss, then give her the D.
Afraid.
Don't have no need to be afraid.
Caligula looks satisfied.
He's like, oh.
Yes.
Whoa.
Wow. Scandalous. Shocking.
Taboo.
Breaking that taboo right there, right now.
Were there protests and shit when that happened?
I don't know. But you know, at least there was at least some rednecks in their house, like, in the future, they expect us to be kissing them damn moon crickets. Bullshit.
No mixing racist. No mixing of races, man. I'm going to boycott this show now, man.
Can you believe this smut they got right here on the TV?
Might as well have them kiss a mule
dude,
or something.
They would have done it, though. Those rednecks bitching.
That's what's next. You're going to have him on there kissing a goddamn mule. You know what? I'm done with this goddamn show. I don't understand half the shit they talk about anyway. Tachyons and crackyons and shit.
I'll defend rednecks here and say, I think the rednecks probably be like, I've done it, too. I think it's probably just a bunch of stuffy middle America white people like, oh! Oh, little Billy doesn't need to see Captain Kirk kissing a Negroid. Stop this immediately. Oh, we're so offended. You know, let's have a letter writing campaign. Oh, I'm so mad.
rednecks watch Star Trek? I'm sure some did. Some at least were flipping through channels. Ostensibly, yes.
It was one of the things that was on the goddamn TV. Every once in a while, they'd be flying around shooting at aliens and shit. I like that.
This was the 60s, TJ. Wasn't it like three channels?
Yeah.
Let's go to one. Let's go to two. Let's go to three. Okay, we're at four. Maybe there's four channels. I don't know how many channels were in the 60s.
There weren't a lot.
Not many, though.
There weren't a lot, Scotty. That's what I know,
No shit, TJ. Really?
Scotty!
Why don't you calm the fuck down, TJ?
There weren't a lot of fucking channels.
Calm down, TJ, you fucking piece of shit.
There weren't a lot of channels, Scotty.
Wow.
You fucking Star Wars fucking fanboy.
You just need to settle down, Scotty. You sack of shit. You sack of fucking shit.
I'm not a sack of shit, TJ. I'm a fucking asteroid made of shit.
Wow.
I personally don't even think she needs to be running that console she runs, personally, let alone getting kissed. I think she probably ought to be cleaning up the bathrooms or something.
Yeah, if she was cleaning the bathrooms, I'd see that. I mean, janitor.
Janitor Uhura.
Whoa.
He did it again?
Damn.
I was pleased that in those days, when you couldn't get even blacks on television, that I not only had a black, but a black woman and a black officer.
You are away from your post, Lester.
And that'll show him.
I told Jean after the end of the first season that I would not be returning to the show.
We terrified and overwrought.
That I wanted to return to my first love, which is musical theater. But I didn't know that meeting a Star Trek fan would change my life. I was told that Van wanted to meet me, and I turned and looked into the face of Dr. Martin Luther King. I was breathless. He says, yes, I'm the Trekker. I'm a Star Trek fan. And he told me that Star Trek was one of the only shows that his wife, Coretta, and he would allow their little children to stay up and watch. And thanked him, and I told him that I was leaving the show. All the smile came off his face, and he said, you can't do that. He said, don't you understand that
the king of the black people has spoken?
Damn, dude.
Exactly, dude.
As we should be seen. You don't.
Martin Luther the King comes to you and tells you don't quit the show. You don't quit the show, right?
You don't do it, man.
And when I went back to work on Monday morning, I went to Gene's office, and I told him what had happened over the weekend. And he says, welcome home. We got a lot of work to do.
Cool.
He's just like, cool. Good. Stay on
right
board.
Right there, right there. Good old Gene.
Good
right
old
now.
Progressive Gene.
He was. I mean, especially in the 60s.
There was a comment on this video that I actually thought was kind of cool that kind of highlights a lot of this like racial diversity and all, you know, not even just racial, but a few other aspects of it as well. This guy right here. Leo Flaherty. Flaherty. I don't know.
He's dead now, by the way. This comment was from 3 years ago.
He has since passed away.
Long
dead. Star Trek had a black female officer during the civil rights movement, a Japanese officer after World War II, a Russian officer during the Cold War, and an alien who wanted to be our friend instead of the usual conquer the earth type. But more than this, its storyline focused on solving problems through diplomacy and tolerance and sticking to your principles. Years later, the next generation demonstrated women in various roles, black people in various roles, a bald man being taken seriously. I don't know how old everyone is, but if you weren't around before TNG, you'd be surprised how shameful being bald used to be. It immediately made you the focus of open mockery. Seriously, Patrick Stewart changed everything for bald men. This guy's really...
Wow.
This guy's a bald
activist.
A bald
activist, yeah.
A blind man going about his job being productive and useful. I mean, that truly is science fiction, am I right? And an alien from a race that had previously been a fierce enemy working as a valuable comrade. It's no surprise that Dr. King felt this show had values that his children should learn.
Yeah. I mean, I can't argue with that in terms of, like, the social commentary level of the show. It was pretty groundbreaking. And a pretty good example of how to unobtrusively do the diversity thing. Because I never really felt like... And like I said, I'm only really familiar with the original series and The Next Generation. But I never really felt like the diversity was forced.
Yeah.
It all felt very organic within the universe as it was presented. It all felt like, right, You know what I mean?
Well, and it's because there was not a big deal that was placed on it. It was just like, in the context of the show, it was just, this is accepted how fans are in this time period in this universe. It's not like it's a big deal.
And the fact that people don't see the difference between that kind of world building and just replacing the Ghostbusters with a bunch of broads is fucking insane to me. You know what I mean? Because if you want to do diversity, do it. Just take the time to build the world that it exists in and make it a believable place for these characters to interact in, and then do your rainbow cast.
Paul, I'm sorry. After you said that comment, you're a sexist. Everything you said afterwards is just a race.
Invalid.
TJ, can you actually, when we go back and look at this,
we'll just
can
edit
you, can
me
you
out.
Edit Paul's entire section out
just
of this
video?
Just
put a big black square.
The cool thing about
where I'm at.
The cool thing about Paul right now is that his hoodie kind of matches the couch, so he just kind of looks
like... Yeah, I look like I'm I'm Jabba the Hutt. You're sitting on me. That's great. I didn't even notice that. But no. Yeah, dude. Jabba the Paul.
I'm actually sitting on Paul.
I'm
going
to wear
now.
This fucking jacket every time we use this couch now.
Paul,
that's awesome.
You're not jostling around anymore, Paul. I'm trying to sit on your fat ass, dude.
Doka la chuka, Scotty.
Hey, next episode.
Sorry.
You know,
sorry.
I don't know. I remember there being a fucking story. I was watching one of these documentaries about Star Trek, and Gene Roddenberry, he didn't like Patrick Stewart in the role, I mean, at first, but when he saw him audition, he's like, that's our fucking Captain Picard right there. But he auditioned in this, like, fake hair and shit. He auditioned bald, but the network wanted him to have hair, so he, like, had some hairpiece flown in that he forgot over in England or some shit, and he put it on and it looked fucking horrible.
Sounds awful.
Network was like, you know, he's got to have hair. He's like, no, I don't think he should have the hair. I think he should just be bald. And they're like, you know, it's the future. You really think they're still gonna be bald guys? Like, yeah, in the future, no one gives a shit if you're bald. And they're like,
one gives a shit.
All right, fine. We'll try it your way, Gene.
Well, it worked out. I mean, it's the totally iconic thing.
And it totally changed American life for bald people from that day
forward. Picard made it okay to be bald.
The North American Association of Bald Men was just forever. Like, they have written several essays. They fucking awarded every year since Star Trek came out in 1987, Patrick Stewart, the man of the year.
Well, they
changed everything for bald men.
Their entire award ceremony is called the Stewarty.
The Stewarty.
Yeah, they give Stewarties to the most prominent bald men. And it's a little statue of Picard standing there, you know?
Engage.
His bald head is the shiniest part of the piece.
Ding.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty cool. But yeah, you know, when we were at the Star Trek convention, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in detail later, maybe. But when me and Scotty were at the Star Trek convention... you know, there was a thing where they were talking to the girl who played the security officer in season one.
Oh, yeah, I know you're talking about.
And I don't remember which of the female cast members they were talking to. But basically, they said during the first season, Gene Roddenberry said, like, you know what? There's too many fucking women on this show. There's just too many. We already got three. We only need two.
So they're going to fire, what was it?
They were going to fire fucking Counselor Troy.
Yeah, that's who they were going to fire.
They were going to fire Marina Sirtis. Because he's like, okay, well, one of them is the security officer. One of them is the doctor. One of them is the fucking...
The ship's counselor.
The ship's counselor. I mean...
Well...
You know? So he was going to fire her, but then... both of those female cast members decided to leave. One of them was killed in the course of the first season. The other one was replaced in the second season, only to return in the third season, bizarrely.
Well, because in TNG, the season two Doctor is pretty much regarded as pretty much one of the most horrible characters and people cast on the show, besides Wesley.
Yeah. Wesley is dog shit.
Yeah, I never liked Troy all that much. I liked her little tryst... that she had, though. Who was she fucking?
Worf, dude.
Yeah, Worf.
Yeah, Worf.
She fucked Worf. And Riker.
And Riker.
She fucked Riker, too?
She fucked Riker, dude.
How do I not remember that she fucked Riker?
Oh, God,
she got married to Riker at some point.
What?
Yeah.
I don't think you remember TNG that well.
Was that after Worf? I thought once you went Klingon, you know, you can't get your white, normal human ding-a-ling on.
All right.
That was a stretch, but all right. You're diggling.
It was even more of a stretch for her, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh shit. How did she downgrade that? Maybe. How did she go from getting the grishnach every night
but you
to
know
like,
what?
Getting it
Riker,
to the normal dick?
Riker was a higher rank, though, so I thought she'd compliment.
Oh, she was sleeping her way to the top?
Yeah.
Yeah. She was
like security officer.
I mean, Captain Picard was
first mate.
She had designs on Picard, but he was just too fucking... He saw through that fucking charade, you know?
Well, Picard's gay, though.
Nah, man, Picard got some pussy in that fucking show.
Yeah, well... He's just keeping up. That's one thing that
he's
didn't,
uptight,
that
you know?
Didn't that we didn't fucking lose our fucking hang-ups about was gay shit, dude. He was in the closet the whole time.
Just in the closet.
Yep.
He really wanted that dick bad.
Yep.
All right. You guys want to go into like the various Star Trek series? Now, some of them I have much less familiarity with than others. So
sure.
Yeah. I only really know anything about the first two.
It's called TOS, the original series.
Star Trek, the original series. I'm not going to bother trying to read any of this shit. We're just going to kind of talk about it.
Yeah, so this is my favorite Star Trek series. I just like the cast better than I like the cast of The Next Generation. Those are the only two I
so
can
So it
really
ran for, what was it, three seasons, TJ?
Yes, I think and it was either three or four.
It was going to be canceled after season two, but they there was actually a letter-writing campaign. Was it CBS or Paramount? Who was it that produced?
It was CBS.
CBS, and they actually revived the show. It was going to be canceled after only two seasons, and they had a third season, but that was it.
The third season, yeah, it was spurned by a letter-writing campaign. Just from
That's
the fans.
Cool.
The third season of the show, they changed things around, made it a little bit more like creature featurey and stuff, and just it really wasn't.
It didn't feel a whole lot like.
Yeah, they made some changes
Star Wars,
artistically.
Star Trek.
Yeah, well, hopefully it didn't feel like Star Wars. But
yeah, it felt like Star Wars, Paul.
They made
That's
some.
Star Wars
they made
on
some
the brain.
Changes artistically that really didn't lead to too good of a place. The third season's kind of not that great.
Then they did the animated series,
which
shortly after.
I tried to watch some of that, and
it's dog shit
awful. I never really cared for the original series very much myself.
It has its moments, though.
I mean,
I'm in the middle on it.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some really good episodes of it, but by and large, just find it a little bit too cheesy, a little bit too over the top. It wasn't the first one I ever saw. I grew up with The Next Generation, so to me, that's kind of like the Star Trek.
That's the gold standard to you.
I don't know. I like the cheese, man. I kind of like that 60s sensibility that it has about it. And I love Captain Kirk as a character. He was my favorite as a kid. And just the way that he kind of bucked this society, I think, is the interesting thing about
I mean, yeah. I mean,
you like
the brash captain. Better
yeah.
Than,
well,
yeah.
You know, he's in this society that values logic and careful strategic planning and diplomacy yeah. and all of that shit. And he's not like that really at all. He has people around him that are like that, thankfully, that can help him be that. But if he was just left on his own, if he didn't have these supporting officers, he'd be like a pirate or some shit. You know what I mean? He'd eventually just break from the fucking... He's that level of
yeah.
cavalier.
Well, that's why a lot of people love that character.
It was a pretty common thing for the Federation to issue some kind of order and for him to violate it.
Oh,
but
yeah.
then save the day in the process and, you know.
So, I liked that. I like Kirk as a character. I think he's the best captain.
Well, I think that makes sense even in the context of the show, though. It's like, you know, it's like the bureaucrats, you know, billions of miles away going, don't do this. And he's like, well, the situation here dictates otherwise.
And, I mean, it's not like Picard never violated a fucking direct order or anything.
Oh,
of
yeah.
course.
I mean, all the captains, I mean, with the exception of Janeway, who had no sort of command structure above her, all of them have violated orders from Starfleet when they felt like it was the right thing to do.
So. Yeah. But none of them, I think, to the extent of Kirk. I think Kirk had a special kind of disregard for the upper echelons of the Starfleet.
Yeah, he was kind of his attitude was kind of more like, they don't know what the fuck's going on out
yeah,
here.
Yeah, they're not
space.
Out here.
Fuck them.
I'm out here, and I've got to deal with this, and I got to save these people's lives, so fire the spread torpedoes, motherfucker. But, sir... Oh, wait. I'm putting Worf in the fucking original series.
You need Spock, dude. Yeah. Spock is the advisor.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of Spock, since we're talking about the original series, Paul, you actually had a little interaction with Spock at one point.
I did. I went to a summer school program called California State Summer School for the Arts at CalArts in Valencia, California. And it's a 2-month program where kids go and they live like they're in college. For an arts degree, and you take college-level arts courses in whatever field. So there's music kids there and theater and acting and singing and all this shit. And one of the things that the performance kids did was they got to perform a piece that they'd worked on for some of the benefactors of CalArts. And that, for me, that year, it was Edward James Olmos, the actor, and Leonard Nimoy, who both contributed to the school. And I had him listen. Each kid performed their monologue, and then right after the monologue, they would walk down to the table where Edward James Olmos and Leonard Nimoy were sitting, and they would get feedback from them. And you know, I talked to Edward James Olmos first, and he had a bunch of, you know, it was very like, oh yeah, it was very good, man. I felt, you know, I liked your passion, blah blah blah. And I stepped over to Leonard Nimoy, and he looked at me and he said, "You didn't prepare enough, did you?" And I was like, I mean, I probably could have spent more time preparing. He was like, it showed. If you're going to do something like this, make sure that you put everything that you have into it. Because when you don't, it shows. You're a very talented person. But if you're not going to put 100% of yourself into it, then what's the point of doing it? Something, I mean, I'm paraphrasing. But
sure.
That was the general. And it was kind of, you know, it felt like a rebuke, but it was the coolest moment that I had at that school, because getting
he
that
didn't blow
of,
any smoke up your ass. He was just being fucking frank.
Yeah, he gave you what he really his real assessment, which was like, you didn't prepare enough. He's like, if you want to actually be an actor, I remember you talking about this more too, saying that like he was saying like it's very rare to be successful in this business too.
Yeah, he did say that. He said success is a rarity in the business, and it's the people that take themselves and their work seriously that get the success in the business. You know, so he was there to kind of, I think, really help guide kids that were looking at trying to do that kind of thing for a living. And it was cool, you know. It was definitely the talking to that I needed, not the one that I wanted. You know what I mean?
So Spock was very Spock-like.
Everybody wants Spock to go like, wow, you're brilliant. But, you know, I didn't get that Spock.
You did not prepare enough, did you?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, shit.
You were unprepared.
You know, you got to take it seriously from fucking Leonard Nimoy, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, that guy had an imposing, like, even if you didn't know of him as Spock or anything, he's just an imposing kind of voice.
Oh, yeah.
And presence.
Oh, his presence is totally, like, especially as a kid sitting across a table from him, it's like fucking, like, looking God and the devil in the eye at the same time. You're just like, whoa, it's fucking Spock, man.
Anything anyone else wants to say about the original series? We can move on. To the good series.
Oh, whatever, dude.
To the multiple inferior spinoff attempts. Yeah, let's take a look at them.
Come yeah,
on. Calm down, Paul.
Star Trek: The Next Generation, greatest Star Trek ever.
So this one ran for 7 seasons.
7. Yep.
The most successful Star Trek series in terms of viewership.
You've never seen the last episode, have you, Scotty?
You know my policy on that, dude.
It never ended.
It never ended. It never ended.
Scotty can't stand to let it end.
Yeah, he will not watch.
It's weird, but I've literally seen every other episode.
Emotionally, he can't handle the fact that there's a final episode.
I can't.
Oh, wow. You love this series then.
Oh, yeah, dude. I love pretty much all the Star Trek series.
I'll be honest. I've seen it once, but I've been reluctant to ever watch it again simply because I don't really like the idea that it ended either. I wish it was still
there you go.
A thing.
I mean, I don't know if it could still be a thing.
I mean, yeah,
no, of course not.
They're too old now, but, you know, whatever.
It's not a rational position to hold.
Geriatrics in space.
I mean, yep. Towards the end of the run of the original cast, we were kind of getting there. You know?
Starting to push it, yeah.
You know,
and you see them now at the conventions. I mean, it's so clear they could not do it anymore. Like, by the time they finished, you know, filming the TNG films, it was like 2002, and it was really, really starting to show, like, they're getting a little old to be doing this shit.
Data in particular was like,
oh, Brent Spiner. Oh shit! Don't should even mention Brent Spiner.
Even with all that makeup caked on, you could still tell, like, man, he's getting a little too old to play this role anymore.
So, who's your standout role in The Next Generation? Who's your favorite?
Picard.
So Picard is yours. What about you, Scotty?
Patrick Stewart.
Well, that was TJ's tick. It was his pick for the
test.
Yeah,
that's not only my favorite in this series, but my favorite character in the history of
television. Yeah, so I knew he was going to pick Picard. Dude, fuck. I don't know.
I love
Patrick Stewart did a really good job. I think Brent Spiner did a really great job.
It's hard to walk this line between, like, I'm like a dreamer and sort of a poet, but I'm also an uptight prick. And he does that. You know, it's like
it's
almost
true.
Two very contradictory sides to this guy.
What about you, Paul? Who is your favorite?
Data.
Yeah.
I was always a data-centric guy.
Also excellent.
For me, the series at one point just kind of became about what weird shit is going to happen with Data in the next few episodes.
Data's day, dude.
Some of the Data episodes are like a lot of the best ones. Measure of a Man, great episode about Data's rights as a sentient being.
I think that's why I liked him, because I like his kind of question that he raises in terms of, like, if we do give birth to AI, what rights does it have, and how do we treat it, and how, you know. Those kind of things are the most interesting episodes.
I don't remember the name of the episode, but there was one. I think it was maybe it was an early episode, I feel like. But there was this guy that, like, kidnaps Data to add him to his weird, like, collection of rare artifacts.
I think that's in, like, season 3. I know the episode you're talking about.
It feels like it's an early season episode.
It's a season, either 3 or 4 episode.
That's a great one. Data actually does get pissed off and nearly fucking kills the guy, but then kind of just...
Well, it kind of reveals the ending of it, but the ending is pretty... It has kind of a great ending, because it kind of shows you that Data is able, at a certain point, to make decisions that you don't think he would possibly want to make or ethically would make.
Yeah, he's able to go beyond his ethical subroutines and all that shit, and it was kind of the first real hint that you had that... Even without the emotion chip that he had later, he was capable of some form of fucking emotion, because he got pissed.
I also liked his point of view as, like, an aloof observer of all the weird emotional shit going on around him. I mean, I know he eventually started chasing after that himself and developing that ability, but I really liked Data when he was humanoid and less human. As his character arc went, I felt like he kind of weakened a little bit as he got more and more human, because I liked him as that kind of... I'm a participant in all of this, and you treat me like I'm one of you, but I'm really not.
Oh, yeah, and he would constantly remind them and explain that, like, I'm not capable of finding that embarrassing or funny or whatever. You know, so I think that, to some degree, I think that's true, but I think that they wanted to give the character an arc, and since Data's, you know, kind of goal was to be more human, ultimately...
It makes total sense.
It makes sense for his character arc to go that way.
Absolutely,
But I see where you're coming from, too. Like, you kind of liked it when he was more of the outsider.
Yeah, he was kind of like the Spock of the show, you know what I mean? But in a very different way, and for very different reasons.
Well, I mean, like, it's almost like the opposite in a way, because it's like, if you go back, like, Spock is some, like, Vulcans have strong emotions, but they repress them all.
Right.
So it's like a guy trying to keep emotional control, and here's another guy who doesn't feel anything, but really wants emotions.
Right.
So it's almost like... they're in the same place, but they're each coming from a different place and trying to get to a different place.
Yeah, coming from completely different places and kind of converging on the same kind of advice. Because Data would always give very Vulcan-like advice, a risk assessment and, you know.
Yeah, then we'd have Worf, who I think it's funny. There's actually compilations of Worf being denied on TNG, because, of course, he always wants to go.
Are there compilations of him, of his plans getting refused, but there's compilations of him getting his ass kicked, too.
So he got beat up a lot?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, many times.
I think they said he lost about 50 to 60% of the fights he got in on the show. But it was
That's not a good record.
Yeah, but it was basically because, like, they had him as, like, Worf's the tough guy, so anything that can beat him must be super tough, you know?
What do you think about the criticism of having the black, aliens be Klingons, these violent, bloodthirsty, kind of amoral, savage kind of characters?
I mean, I think their culture really is almost more like... Asian to me, like a more like primitive Mongolian kind of culture.
Yeah, they're more invocative of something like that. Yeah, that is kind of how I feel about them too.
I mean, it was
Genghis Khan type of shit.
They didn't just cast black actors as Vulcans either. You know,
that's true.
There was a lot of white. I mean, Christopher Lloyd was a Vulcan at one point. You know,
You mean Vulcans? You mean Klingons?
Not Klingons. Klingons, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, Vulcans?
I mean,
like,
Khan what? Was... No, wasn't Khan a Klingon in the movie?
No.
No, he wasn't. Who am I thinking of? There's some other Klingon villain in one of the fucking movies.
I think it was Christopher Lloyd was a Klingon. In
oh, Christopher Lloyd, okay.
The dude with the eye patch.
Oh, yeah. He wasn't that one. Was he? I don't know. I don't know. Really, I don't remember the name of
whatever.
It.
Whatever.
There's so much fucking Star Trek shit. Who
anyway.
But yeah, that's kind of TNG. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about TNG?
No.
Sort of? Okay.
We can move on to, damn it, to Deep Fat Fried, the ultimate Star Trek series. Deep Space Nine.
Which was, it definitely went in a different direction. Well, one, TNG was the last Gene Roddenberry, like sort of the thrust, the creator of that. This is Rick Berman, who had taken over for Gene Roddenberry. So this is a wholly kind of new approach to Star Trek.
Someone in the chat said TJ has dementia, because I said Vulcan instead of Klingon.
He does.
Fuck you.
I said Star Wars instead of Star Trek. Nah, I guess we all
how
got
come
dementia.
He doesn't have fucking dementia, dude?
Oh, I probably did.
Christopher Plummer, they're saying.
Oh, yes.
Played the Vulcan with the eye patch.
That's cool. Correct.
Yeah, there we go.
So, Paul, you've not seen DS9 at all, right?
I've seen probably a couple of episodes of it here and there. Maybe a couple just in the time I've spent being you guys' friend, because you guys will often be watching some Deep Space Nine or some shit. I know Quark, you know what I mean?
Yeah, Paul, you know...
I know some of the characters
we need,
in
we
it.
We need that commitment on Cinema for Cynics, Paul, to watch DS9.
Oh, I'll do it. You know, well, you guys have said it's great, so...
You know, DS9, I kind of dragged my feet coming into that one.
You did.
Because I just really didn't like the idea of it's all on a space station. Like, I didn't like that it's all set in one place. It's like, that's not what Star Trek's
about.
But
it really isn't, though.
It's about exploring around, you know? I mean, primarily it is. I mean, they go other places here and there.
I mean,
but, you know.
I mean, yeah, Bajor and Deep Space Nine are the primary sets, but they go off the station quite a bit on the show. It's not sure. Like, I mean, I really don't feel
especially
like it hurt
in
it.
Later seasons.
Oh, yeah, I don't feel like it'll hurt the series. I don't think it's as good as TNG, but I think in a way it's, well, in some ways I think it's better. I think there's a lot of darker themes.
It gets a lot more subversive. You definitely see it moving away from that Gene Roddenberry-esque sort of optimism and being a little bit more like, okay, the future's not all fucking sunshine and roses. Like, humanity's still got some fucking problems.
I guess you'd have to, like, look at the bureaucracy side of things in order to get that look. Because when you're out there on the space, on the ship, you know, exploring uncharted space and running into new aliens and shit, of course that protocol is going to be invoked over and over and over again, that perfect, like, you know, this is we won because our society functions well. But you need to be able to see, like, the administration of a planet, or in this case I guess a space station. I don't know, it makes me kind of interested to see it a little more, because
and it's cool because you know, there was a lot more morally ambiguous characters in the main cast. You know, it wasn't all just a bunch of Starfleet, starry-eyed, like, we believe in this ideal.
We're team good guy, yeah.
Team good guy forever, you know? You had people in the main cast who were not like that. You had Quark, who was driven primarily by greed and a very Ferengi ethos. You had his brother, what was his brother's name, Nog? Something
no,
like that?
No, Nog was his... Was
yeah,
his,
Nog was the was, young... What,
what's the guy's name? Fuck.
What's his fuck? What's the name of the Rom?
Rom.
Rom, dude.
Or Ron, yeah. Whatever. Rom. Rom.
You had his brother. He was kind of like the misfit Ferengi, who was actually kind of a liberal, but
kind of had a heart of gold kind of thing, always doing the right thing to, you know, his detriment.
You had the little Ferengi kid, Nog, who was into, you know, he wanted to be, ended up joining Starfleet and totally, not totally forsaking the Ferengi ways. Odo, who was just obsessed with order and kind of viewed humanoid beings with some degree of contempt.
I know I didn't like Odo as a character in the few episodes that I've seen.
He's an uptight prick.
The blank face dude. Isn't he a shapeshifter or
yes,
some
he
shit?
Is. Yeah,
the changeling.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, I mean, they're kind of obsessed with order, and it's almost like kind of like it within them to think of, you know, what they call humanoids, like solids, as inferior, which in a lot of ways they are.
Sisko was cool. Definitely one of the, probably the most morally flexible of the fucking captains.
Oh yeah, there's
not to say
where,
that, you know,
There's some episodes where there's some pretty morally questionable choices made by
Sisko. The first black captain is also the one that's morally flexible.
Well, he's actually not even a captain to begin with.
He actually starts as a commander in the series and doesn't even get promoted to captain until season 3 or 4.
The end of season 3, I believe.
Yeah. Something like that. They added Worf later on. Worf has a much better character run, I think, in DS9 than he ever did in TNG. Yes. He kind of fits better with that cast because he gets a little bit more freedom to be a Klingon.
Are Romulans the main antagonist?
No, the Dominion.
The Dominion overall.
The Dominion.
The whole reason this space station is important is because it's by this wormhole that leads to this other
sector
of space.
It's basically like they find a stable wormhole.
Yeah.
And then that basically leads to them finding the Dominion. Like, they encounter the Dominion, and of course the Dominion wants to take over.
And pretty much the entire last season of the show is devoted entirely to a prolonged war with the Dominion. There's like a fucking 7-part episode.
Is that okay? Okay. So what are those dudes called? The weird looking dudes in this one.
Oh, the Vorta? Or you mean the Jem'Hadar?
How is he supposed to know?
I don't know which one.
Well, the Dominion the Dominion is kind of like a dark federation.
Yeah, because it's not just one group or race.
What are they? Cassians or
Cardassians?
Cardassians.
Yeah, Cardassians. There's a lot of Cardassian shit.
Okay. Because they're part of the Dominion, right? And then Bajor isn't.
No.
Bajor is actually not even part of the Federation.
They
want to join the Federation.
They want to join. It's kind of... Okay.
Well, that's why...
All right.
That's why Deep Space Nine is there.
All right. It gets complicated. Okay.
dude, it's getting real complicated.
It gets fucking complicated.
Let's put it this way. You need to watch the series, Paul.
Okay.
But
this is handled over several years.
The general gist of it is it's kind of a darker Star Trek. It's got a pretty good cast, I'd say, overall.
Cool.
So whatever. Star Trek... Voyager. This is my uncle's favorite Star Trek. I think it's an underrated fucking Star Trek series myself. The concept of Voyager is very different from the other Star Treks. The first two, the original series and Next Generation, are kind of all about exploration. Deep Space Nine is about a space station that's of key importance to a sector, then kind of this build up to this big war between the Federation.
And ultimately important to the entire fate of the Federation.
Yeah. And Voyager is in some ways a smaller story. It's just about this small starship that gets thrust across the entire galaxy and they have like a 60 to 70 year journey home at fucking maximum warp. So it's about them, on the way, they're like, hell, we're out here in uncharted territory. We're fucking Starfleet. We got to fucking explore.
Kind of the ultimate explorer in exploration story because...
But they also have a crew that's made up not only of Starfleet, but of ex-Maquis who were actually rebelling against the Federation. So these two disparate crews have to come together in this dire circumstance where they're light years away from support of any kind.
And they pick up crew members of like alien variety out there too, right?
Yeah, a couple of them. They pick up Neelix. I wish they wouldn't have.
No, they should have left him there.
They should have left his ass behind. But they get Neelix. Cass at one point, she leaves and is replaced by Seven of Nine, who's a Borg who... comes out of the collective.
An unassimilated Borg, basically, yeah.
Well, de-assimilated.
Oh, de-assimilated, yeah, however you say it.
This show is cool. I mean, it's a little bit uneven. It doesn't have the same consistency as the previous shows we mentioned, but it definitely has some really good episodes. A lot of stuff with the Borg, and just a cool premise. Probably one of the weaker casts overall.
I would say.
How's Janeway as a captain?
She kind of divides people. I'm Team Janeway, personally. I think she's really cool. She has sort of a friendliness with her crew that you really don't see with a lot of the other captains, but she's also very much like, I'm in charge. She's,
I mean, that sounds kind of Picardish. Is she Picardish?
I would say she's probably more like Picard than she's like Sisko or Kirk.
Okay.
For sure. But definitely way warmer than him. But when she can also get in like an obsessive mode, where she can become single-minded.
Yeah, she can wear the fucking pants when she needs to, but she's more approachable and friendly than Picard ever really is portrayed
as. And treats her crew more like a family.
Yeah.
Probably just because of their circumstance as well, though.
Actually, the year we went to the convention was the 25th. Was it 25th anniversary?
25th anniversary of Voyager. She got a huge standing ovation. No division among the fans.
No,
there.
Yeah.
They fucking loved her.
At the Star Trek Las Vegas convention, wow. Everyone loved Voyager.
She had a fucking... She was definitely willing to take some big risks as a captain. Like, you know, there'd be situations where they'd be like, you know, we have a very little chance of this succeeding. She'd be like, fuck it, do it. I got a good gut feeling.
Fucking
do it. It
always
seemed to work
out. So she had a little bit of Kirk in her, too.
Yeah, maybe a little bit of Kirk, a little bit of Picard, but also just very much doing her own thing, too, at the same time.
Cool.
So I think Voyager is an underrated series. I know literally nothing about these next two, so we're probably going to have to... here we go. Star Trek Enterprise and Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, I know very little to nothing about either of these.
I'll just talk. I mean, I tried to watch the first episode of Enterprise. They started, every fucking Star Trek has had some sort of powerful opening theme.
With horns.
Yeah. You know, the first one, the first one had that groovy, and all that. Next Generation, dun, 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 dun. And I mean, I'll admit the DS9 and Voyager ones were a little bit more restrained, but it was still classical music. This one, you fucking watch Star Trek Enterprise, and it has some fucking cheesy-ass Faith of the Heart song as its fucking theme.
Weird.
It's like, I got faith.
Isn't it
of
like
the
working class... Star Trek.
Yeah, I mean, it's a prequel. It's supposed to be right at the beginning of the Federation. You know, humankind is just starting to explore space in the first Enterprise. I don't know. It fucking sucks, dude. I mean, I've heard from some people that there's some good episodes later on in the series, but I can't get far enough to get to them.
The captain.
Scott Bakula, I think.
Yeah, Scott Bakula.
You know, just the most, I like Scott Bakula. I don't know.
Quantum Leap, dude.
Enterprise just
seemed
like...
I'd rather watch Quantum Leap.
Yeah.
Enterprise was just like the last gasp. Like Rick Berman and that kind of creative team was run out of steam. I was like, let's do a prequel thing. And that's not necessarily a bad idea, but it just didn't really... It didn't strike me any of the episodes I've seen as that interesting. It didn't really feel very Star Trek-like to me. It just felt like... and even when it did, it just seemed ultra derivative, ultra boring. It lacked the... It lacked the cast of the other series. It lacked a good premise. It was just like, okay, we're just going to the early days of Starfleet.
I think maybe that's because it examines a period of time that, like, is why I don't agree with Gene Roddenberry, which is, like, that transitional time between this kind of politically divided humanity and humanity all coming together, and it kind of explores that. And that doesn't, I don't know, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So maybe... Setting that at odds with what people would actually expect to happen is why the series is not as loved.
Yeah, definitely. Pretty much the whole cast to Enterprise was there, and they didn't attract much of a crowd at all at the Star Trek convention.
No,
I think a lot of people feel similarly.
They were the first day that a lot of people aren't even really checking out the panels. It was just they got a very muted. They got like, yeah, good job, guys. But
yay, Scott.
Scat back.
He wasn't even there.
He wasn't there. Maybe he would have got something. I don't know.
I'm sure he would have.
I mean, because he's been in some other classic sci-fi shit.
And say what you want, but he's still a captain, dude. He's still going to be royalty at the fucking...
Oh, of course.
True enough. Star Trek Discovery, I just don't know shit about it.
Yeah.
I don't either.
I haven't watched it yet. I'm going to watch it soon. And we can probably do a future episode on it. You know, or at least talk about it in one of the future episodes. But
yeah.
We don't really know enough to actually give you guys a good rundown of it.
I know absolutely nothing about it.
I know it's new.
I know the Klingons look like dog dookie.
Oh, yeah, they look terrible. All right, let's go on to this list I don't know which one of you found this, but looks pretty interesting. Most overused 100 Star Trek episode plots.
Okay.
Captain Kirk puts the make on a female of an alien species who is oddly more attractive to human males than any of the human female on the set. Well, I mean, you know, if you're in space, you want to get some fucking exotic space.
It is the final frontier. I mean,
yeah.
Let's be honest, you know, in more ways than one.
Who hasn't fucked a human?
Yeah, man.
I've never fucked some green bitch with antennas before.
Yeah, he wants to go for something different.
I actually talked about this earlier. Captain Kirk mutinies against Starfleet. His senior staff decides by vote that they're all in, too. as a former shipmate elsewhere in the universe, as none of them, curiously, has any training in military discipline. They steal starships and divert others off their assignments, but their boldness saves the day, and Starfleet does not even issue a scolding, but dishes out promotions.
Yeah.
Some sort of transporter accident happens.
Oh, God.
And creates a duplicate character of a regular, or merges two characters, and the result is more likable than the original, but the damned writers keep the original. There's a fucked up episode of Star Trek Voyager called Tuvix. And basically, Tuvok and Neelix are in a transporter accident where they get merged into one being. And in many ways, Tuvix is actually better than either of them. Like, they actually kind of balance each other out to make a more likable and helpful character. But also with its own unique identity. And then basically they figure out how to fix it. But then Tuvix is like, well, hey, I mean, for you to fix me back into both of them, then me, the new person, Tuvix, has to, you know, die.
Yeah, fuck that.
And he's like, fuck that, I don't want to die. And so there's this big moral dilemma. Ultimately, Janeway's like, eh, save two people or save one person. Fuck you, Tuvix, you're dead. You know?
Damn. That's harsh.
Yeah, and
Tuvix is fucking dead, like, bitches.
She, like, leads him away in handcuffs. It's like, you couldn't get on the fucking transporter,
damn,
bitch.
Damn.
It's a morally ambiguous moment.
Janeway fucking
takes
a stand.
Gestapo shit.
You know what, Paul?
Oh, well.
It's a brave new world, Paul.
So, yeah, Wesley Crusher saves the day despite being a teenager with no evident skills beyond playing video games and sucking up to the adults.
Gee, guys.
Boo.
Dude, the first few seasons of Star Trek are fucking, The Next Generation, are terrible for that reason. You have no idea how many times in those early episodes Wesley saves the fucking day after everyone counted him out because he's a kid.
Yeah, but he's just a Gene Roddenberry Mary Sue, though.
Yeah, he was Gene Roddenberry's Mary Sue. Gene Roddenberry even went so far, we played a clip on that previous show we were on at some point, where Gene Roddenberry literally said to a crowd of people, if you hate Wesley Crusher, you hate me. I'm like, well, I guess I hate you,
yeah.
Gene. I don't know what to fucking tell you.
I hate your fucking guts,
yeah, Wesley
Gene.
Crusher is a horrible character. I mean, Will Wheaton is an insufferable fucking prick if there ever was one.
Yeah, he does kind of suck.
He is. He's an insufferable human, even on a fucking, just a personal level. If you read his Twitter, if you read the things he writes and his acting.
Yeah,
he's
smug.
Fucking, he's a smug asshole, and he's fucking horrible. He has no, look, every other person that was on that show, The Next Generation, did a much better job than Wesley ever did. That's why after Gene Roddenberry died, his ass was written off. So, Will Wheaton, that's why you weren't on the show, bitch, is because you weren't good enough to be there.
Will Wheaton peaked in Stand By Me, dude.
He did.
Let me tell you something. I've heard Gene Roddenberry talk about this. He said that basically what he was trying to set up this weird little trifecta of characters with Wesley Crusher,
ugh,
Commander Riker, and Captain Picard. And it was basically they were all supposed to be versions of himself, so they were written to be Mary Sue's, with Wesley being the young version of himself, who's just discovering this journey and idealistically and all this shit. Riker, who's kind of in the middle of the journey, and Picard, who's at the end of the journey and has, you know, gathered all the wisdom and all this shit and isn't, you know, total command and all this. Now, I think for Riker and Picard, it worked okay. For Wesley Crusher, he fucking sucks.
Swing
and
a miss.
And there's a reason that as soon as Gene, like almost immediately after Gene died, he was written off the fucking show.
Yeah, he did suck. I mean, he was in some, like, I like that video, like the game episode.
Oh.
He gives a weird performance in that, dude. He smiles throughout that entire fucking guy.
That's
true.
The weird fucking Wesley.
He was creepy. The episode itself was good, but not because of him.
Yeah, definitely
not
because of him.
If you want to watch a good Wesley episode, it's after he was taken off the main cast. It's basically Wesley is part of this flight squadron or something. I forget what they're called. Delta Squad or some bullshit.
Yeah, some generic name.
Some generic. We're ace pilots thing. And one of the kids in the fucking squad dies because they were attempting a maneuver that was banned and, you know, all this other stuff. So the rest of the squad basically gets together and they all decide they're gonna lie about why this kid died and, you know, make up some story.
The Kobayashi incident, dude.
Yeah. Something like that. I don't know if that's
from the movie.
That's yeah. Oh, no, Kobayashi Maru.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Well, no, this is different.
This is different.
I don't know what the fuck. That has nothing to do with this.
Yeah, Paul. That was a total derailment. But Wes,
anyway, that's a good episode because basically it's like the walls are closing in on Wesley and he's trying to maintain this fiction and Captain Picard realizes
dresses
he's full
him
of
down.
Shit.
Yeah.
Gives him
so he gets fucked on in the episode.
And then finally, after everyone fucking badgers him, he fucking comes out and tells the
truth.
They
finally give Wesley like a treatment. Of, like, really, they give him a real character treatment. It's not just like, you know, well, he shucks, guys, I saved the day. It's like Wesley takes some heat in that episode.
Yeah.
Do you think they brought him back just so people could get that satisfaction of seeing Wesley finally fucking get what he deserves?
I don't know, because it's honestly the first time you ever actually have any sort of sympathy for the character, because he's always been just this golden child, does everything right. So it was kind of nice to see him fuck up and do something wrong and be in the hot seat. So, I mean, it almost kind of helped the character a little bit. I mean, not enough to save a character that's already annoyed the piss out of you forever, but it's kind of like a better direction. Here's one of the fucking cliches. Worf gets the fuck beaten out of him.
Yeah.
That's true.
Well, we explained that earlier. I mean, Worf's seen as the tough guy in the crew, so naturally...
he's going to be in the
when the alien
fights.
Beams aboard the fucking bridge, you know, they're going to fight Worf first.
I don't know if this is anywhere on this list. If it's not, then it's a huge oversight, but I'm just going to tell you one of the most overused fucking tropes for a Star Trek episode.
Oh, I don't know.
Some, two people, maybe three...
in a shuttle...
They're in the shuttle, and guess what? They don't get along. It's the two characters at odds with each other.
And guess
but
what happens
then
next?
The shuttle crashes, and they have to survive together on some planet.
Oh, yeah. That happens a lot.
Dude, I don't know. It happens a lot in all of them, but I'll tell you what. In Voyager, it's practically every fucking three or four episodes. There's some
lame
shuttle episode. And some of them are good. But a lot of them, you're just like,
Yeah, you know what? There's some great shuttle crashing episodes, but then there's also ones that are just, they're awful. They're just filler episodes.
And it's just like, stop with this fucking plot. Enough.
You'd think they'd fix whatever it is about these fucking shuttles that makes them crash so goddamn much.
Yeah, you know, Star Trek, Starfleet needs to come up with some better fucking shuttle
designs.
Yeah,
these shuttles are fucking subpar.
Good thing
I would not get, if I was in their universe, I would not get on one of those fucking
But you know
shuttles.
What? It's okay. There's always a Class M planet just nearby, TJ.
Yeah, dude, with breathable air and fucking perfect temperature, so no worries.
We're kind of getting a little bit pressed for time. Maybe we could get into the movies at this point.
Oh, dude, I'm really going to be unpopular during this because I kind of like these movies, dude.
Well, you do?
Oh, yeah.
I thought you were going to say the opposite.
No.
Okay, this is not the first one. Sorry,
no.
Hold on.
Wrong. So the first Star Trek...
I just get out of order. I put these in fucking
order.
Well,
you're an idiot.
God damn it.
This is four. Yep, that's three.
I don't know what's
going
on.
That's two.
All right.
And here we go.
Whoa.
So this was actually... Gene Roddenberry was trying to develop what was called Star Trek Phase 2. And that actually ended up becoming Star Trek The Motion Picture, which was released... What was it? 1979 or something? Or what year was it released?
I think it was 1980.
Oh, 1980.
Or something like that. Or maybe in the 70s. I don't know. Look it up. You got a phone.
I don't.
Wow, TJ, good job. So I have to look on my phone instead of something you should have had prepared, you fucking worthless fucking chode.
Why am I supposed to have it prepared? What does it matter what year it came out?
Because
just talk about the fucking movie.
I like having completion, TJ. I like having that.
Just do your fucking job.
Scotty's a completionist, TJ. And you need to next time...
I like
put
telling
fucking...
people shit about this fucking movie, TJ. 1979, I was actually right, TJ. Thanks a lot, you fucking idiot.
All right, you were right. Big fucking deal.
You're right. Big fucking deal.
TJ getting the Wesley treatment.
Big fucking deal. Who cares, Scotty? No one cares.
So what are your feelings on the first Star Trek movie, TJ?
It was not a Star Trek movie.
Slow. That's how I feel. I feel
they tried to make it 2001 A Space Odyssey,
yep,
which Star Trek is not. They tried to make it a feast for the eyes. And honestly, some of the effects are very impressive.
They're cool, man.
No, they're cool. They're not Star Trek. It doesn't feel like a Star Trek movie. It's totally not in the right... It doesn't have the right sensibilities. There's practically no humor in it. It's just kind of a dry, slogging, boring mess, in my opinion. What do you think, Paul?
I don't know. I kind of enjoyed all of the earlier movies. The movies didn't really start to suck for me.
We'll get to it. We'll get to it.
Right. Well, no. I mean, I like the newer ones too, but yeah, no. The older movie. I don't know. It's not the greatest of them. Like, I like The Search for Spock. That's my favorite
of
the movies.
A good one.
But I don't know. I like it. It is slower than the other films are. I'll give you that criticism.
All right. So let's talk about Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan, which came out in the year I don't know, and I don't give a fuck.
You should know, TJ. You should know.
I don't know what year.
I don't know what year.
I don't know now.
I don't know what year.
Star Trek II.
A lot of people argue, and I think, you know,
Wrath of Khan,
almost rightly so, is one of the best Star Trek movies, or the best.
Generally agreed upon as being either the best or at least a contender for the best. Definitely a very solid movie. It does kind of get... It kind of brings back the cheesiness that you expect from the original series, but measures it out a little bit more.
I like it because it just feels like a slightly higher budget, long original series episode.
Yeah, and it brings back a villain from the original series that most people had probably forgotten even fucking existed. I mean, it's just got a great fucking story. Khan's a great villain. There's great antagonism.
That's why it's great.
Spock's death, very powerful.
I mean, plays really well. Yeah, it plays really well in the movie.
Done fucking well.
The whole cast is on point. Like Paul said, it's just like a higher budget TOS episode. It's great.
Budget for this movie was much lower than it was for Star Trek the Motion Picture.
It doesn't really show, to be honest with you.
They didn't need it. I mean, used a lot of the same shots and tricks that they used in the original series, and I guess it felt way more like a Star Trek movie.
I feel like you had a great villain. You had a really plausible story. I think everything that just it really just everything came together on that film, and it feels right. It doesn't feel overly long. It doesn't feel overly short.
The interplay between Kirk and fucking Khan is what makes the whole fucking movie.
When you have those moments, it's kind of cool.
It's a great rivalry.
I always just love a really good rivalry in a film in general.
And this one's great.
Yeah. Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. I think this is a good one.
Yeah, I like this one, even though I think it was a little lame for them to bring Spock back.
Well, he didn't want to come back.
I know.
But the studio wanted him to come back.
The studio wanted him back.
Excuse me, Spock, you're actually the most popular character.
Make us some money.
Don't tell William Shatner. We need you to come back.
But it does feel very tonally different, and it's just shot different than an episode. So once again, more like a movie. But I guess it feels more grounded.
I don't have the strongest memory of this one. It's been a while since I've seen it. I do remember liking it. I do remember thinking it was good. Don't remember a whole lot about it. I thought the way they brought Spock back was at least kind of cool because they tied it into something from the previous film with the Genesis device or whatever it was. I thought that was a pretty good one. This one kind of divides people, I feel like, too, but I actually really like it. This is Star Trek IV, the Voyage Home.
The one with the whales.
The whales, yes. Dude.
Yeah, I don't like this one.
This is where Kirk and Spock go to the 80s, and they're just like, whoa, we're the odd men out. They got to go fucking
they're walking
save
around.
Whales.
They're walking around the
it's
fucking city and shit.
It's literally the Save the Whales episode movie.
I don't like this one because it's like one of my least favorite overused plot lines in the other ones, the back in time episodes. Like, I'm watching Star Trek because I want to see shit happen in the goddamn future.
I don't know. I just kind of like the idea of the Star Trek characters going to our time or a time near ours.
Similar, yeah.
And seeing that kind of stuff. I like it. I thought it was cool. I honestly liked the whales message.
It is a little hokey, though. I mean, you know, these aliens can communicate with the whales.
It's more than a little hokey. Well, the aliens are... It turns out that whales are aliens, and they came to visit our planet
and all that stuff.
It's pretty ridiculous, but I don't know. I really like it. I got a soft spot for it. Maybe it's because I saw it when I was young. I feel it's
an okay. I mean, it's not great. It's not bad. It's just like... I put that in the middle.
All right, now, the next one we're going to talk about...
Oh, God.
What
does God need with a starship?
I don't even remember what the fuck. It's The Final Frontier.
Is this the one where they go in search of...
Yes.
Yep. Oh,
yeah.
God.
All right. This movie, this fucking piece of shit right here, this is the worst fucking...
Directed by William Shatner.
I might think the original movie is slow, but at least, honestly, it's a pretty decent film.
Sure.
I think it's slow, but decent. This movie, The Final Frontier, is fucking horrible.
Awful.
It's pretty bad.
It's directed by William Shatner.
Isn't it written by him as well?
Written by William Shatner as well.
I see the problem developing already.
Basically, he was pissed because Leonard Nimoy directed the previous one, and it was a big hit, and everybody liked it. So he's like, let me do the next one, and it fucking sucks. And
you like campfires in Star Trek? No?
Dude, you know, Honestly,
what about mountain climbing?
It's the weirdest cinematic experience. Because when you're watching it, it begins with fucking Kirk and Spock and McCoy sitting around a campfire.
Row, row, row your boat. Well, the very opening shot is Kirk climbing a mountain, and then he falls, and then he gets saved at the last second by Spock.
And then, okay, then they fucking, they go on this adventure. Spock's got a brother no one ever fucking heard of that's looking for God, and they... stupid shit happens and they find God and God's not God. He's some alien that just trapped somewhere and who cares? And then it ends with them back around the same fucking campfire singing row, row, row your boat again. Sweet. And you're like, it just makes it feel like nothing that happened had any weight or relevance and might as well have just been a fucking fever dream.
Shatner, for some reason, goes back. I mean, Shatner fucking shits on Star Trek. Let's put it that way. His last name is meant to be taken literally. He shat on Star Trek.
Nothing in the movie has any weight. It doesn't even feel... It just doesn't... It feels so fucking beyond irrelevant. It's just the dumbest, stupidest, worst fucking movie.
It felt like they just... At the end, they just like, hey, we have this campfire shit. Let's just recycle that back. It's like, what? They were on this...
Dude, it's brilliant.
They went on this whole fucking journey, and it's just their back singing "Row, Row Your Boat."
He Tarantino'd it, dude. Quentin Tarantino ripped off his style from Shatner.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know.
Begin where it ends.
Terrible fucking
movie.
So
the last of the Star Trek movies with the original cast, Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. This is a good one. I haven't seen it in a long time. All I pretty much remember of it is I remember Kirk and I think McCoy... We're in a Klingon prison camp, and they got it framed for assassinating a chancellor, and the Romulans are involved. There's a lot of stuff that happens.
It's good.
A lot of intrigue.
There's a lot of the cast. The main one of the things that's a drawback is the main cast is just way too old to be playing their characters anymore.
Oh God, yeah, you're really feeling
it's definitely
that
they're beyond dusty at this point.
It's like. Ensign Harold? Why am I still an ensign? You know, it's like,
why hasn't he been promoted yet? Yeah.
Yeah, you kind of wonder, like, does Starfleet have, like, the worst fucking promotion schedule ever? Like, all these characters...
Maybe Harold is just happy being an ensign.
He is. That's all he wants to do in life. But it's still a decent flick.
By this point, Scotty is fucking fat and old. And
hey, man, don't talk about me like that.
Shatner's pretty paunchy himself in this one.
Shatner looks bad.
Oh, he's definitely...
He looks swollen.
Yeah. Nimoy still looked all right.
Yeah, Nimoy kept him up.
Yeah, well, because Nimoy just had to look gaunt, you know, like a Vulcan, even as an old...
I think he was an alcoholic, too. I think that probably helped. He just wanted to drink.
Yeah.
You know, so he was more interested in drinking.
I just want to drink. Vulcan.
But still did a good job. I mean, it's a good movie.
You know, I don't... Like I said, I haven't seen it in a while. I don't have a whole lot to say about it, but I do remember it being good. I might actually
I enjoyed it.
Now we get to the unfortunate cinematic history of the Next Generation films.
Oh, no. Oh.
As much as I prefer that show over the original series, I gotta say their movies are...
Dog shit.
...mostly inferior.
Not most of them are almost unwatchable.
So
this one's okay.
I mean, like, this is watchable, but not really good.
I mean, an unceremonious... fucking way
passing of the torch.
Yeah, to send off fucking Captain Kirk that way was just... I don't agree.
Captain
with
Kirk
it.
Gets a shitty send off in horrible. This movie. We don't really get
boring
the Kirk,
villain.
We don't get
generic.
The Kirk Picard interaction that you really want.
Yeah. They're making breakfast.
Data gets his emotion chip installed, and it kind of ruins his character throughout
the Data
entire
sucks.
Film. It makes him like gets too emotional.
Turns into one of our girlfriends.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
especially after the women episode.
Exactly. Man. You know, so that didn't work. They had the Clockwork Orange guy as the villain.
He sucked.
He was all right.
I don't put it on him. I just put that was a shit movie. The script was shit. Every time I've seen that movie, I'm just like, I really wanted it to succeed, but I just. For all of my love for Star Trek, it just doesn't work. It doesn't work.
It would have been better as just a fucking Next Generation or an episode. Yeah, if they short or just making a Next Generation movie and don't do the stupid fucking unnecessary crossover.
The passing
bullshit.
The torch was just it totally failed.
Yeah, the torch passing thing.
They dropped the torch. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, they dropped the torch. Star Trek and there's a huge plot hole at the end of the movie. Nostalgia Critic gets into it in his review. Just go watch
check
that
it
if
out.
You want to know.
It's a great review of it.
Probably the best of the Next Generation movies, Star Trek First Contact. I love the Borg. I love seeing them get a big screen treatment. This film's pretty good. That being said, it also has some problems. It basically tries to turn Captain Picard into an action star. Gets rid of his thoughtfulness.
We do another time travel plot line, which, yeah. You know...
At least we visit a time that was still in the future. We actually get to see a more tumultuous part of humanity's future.
I definitely like
that look of it
better than what I hear about Enterprise in terms of like looking at the early days of Starfleet and shit.
We see Zefram Cochrane, the guy who invented
Warp Drive.
Yep.
And he's this great hero in the future, but actually in the past he's just wanted to make money and he's like...
Just kind of a fuck up and a putz. Yeah, he's kind of like, I don't know what I'm doing.
A grizzled, drunk kind of guy. He's not anything like what they expect.
I don't know. I just think it's the Borg that saves this one.
Honestly. Oh, it is. The Borg taking over the Enterprise.
They're just such a great, you know, villain collectively.
The Borg Queen is actually
collectively,
awesome.
Collectively, yes.
Yeah, the Borg Queen is great.
That
in this
Borg
movie.
Queen is wonderful.
Yeah, I love the, like,
she's a great villainess.
Spinal column bitch.
If I made a list of the top 10 female villains, she'd probably be on that motherfucker.
She is great.
She turns up.
Yeah, they turn Data kind of like evil and they kind of manipulate.
Yeah.
It's great. I mean, it's my favorite TNG movie easily.
Yeah, it's not perfect, but it's the best one we got, so whatever. Next movie, really fucking abysmal in my opinion. Star Trek Insurrection.
Star Trek,
look at that.
Star Trek Halloween, you mean? Like, come on, this is fucking horrible.
I remember very little.
Oh yeah, Leatherface.
I don't know if either of you guys remember the plot to this movie.
I don't.
As far as I remember,
is this Insurrection?
Yeah, Insurrection.
I barely remember it.
They're on some kind of planet where they age or they have some kind of anti-aging scheme, but it kills people or I don't remember, dude. I don't even remember. It's really bad. I've only seen it once. I thought it was abysmal. I don't plan to ever really see it again. Maybe if I decide to just watch all these movies to completion or something.
Yeah, I've only seen it one
time.
It
felt
a long time ago.
Not only did it just
when it came out.
Not only did it just feel like a really long episode. It felt like a really long version
boring.
Of a not particularly good episode.
Yeah, an off episode, like a filler episode. You know, it was just horrible. I mean, even though it's a motion picture, it doesn't really feel it. It's just a boring
script.
How
do you go from the Borg to this? Like, with so many iconic villains to choose from, you could have brought back Lore. You could have fucking had some Romulans. You could have had the thing
Q.
with the Klingons. Yeah, Q could have been in it.
They went with the most boring story possible.
They went with some unknown alien you've never seen before in your fucking life.
That picture that you chose basically sums it up.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like what
looks
I remember
like
about the movie.
Yeah, if you really want to see it, then watch it, but you're going to be disappointed.
The next one.
And that was it. The final one,
the final of the Next Generation.
With Tom
films.
Hardy,
one of Tom Hardy's first big roles, playing a younger version of Captain Picard. Basically, a botched Romulan experiment. They were going to try to clone Captain Picard and replace him. The clone was too unstable, so they sent him off to live with their slave race, the Remans, Romulans and Remans. You get the pun there, I think. He starts to, you know, he uses his strategic mind to lead them to actually threaten the power and stability of the Romulan Empire. And, for some reason, Starfleet gets involved and, you know, Picard has to fucking face off against a younger version of himself and also wrestle with sort of the philosophical implications of, hey, if I'd been sent to the same planet and had the same experiences, I'd be this person instead of the person I am.
So, basically, I think that's what it summed this up is a little more interesting than Insurrection, but still, it just doesn't really work.
The premise is good.
Yeah, the premise is good.
The execution sucks.
Yeah.
There was about 50 minutes of character development footage cut from this film to make it more of an action movie and to make it more of a villain-centric
film.
Bad
decision.
And it ruins it.
And I don't know if that footage could have saved the movie, but I suspect it would have been better. A lot of the original cast feel that the director of this movie was an inept retard and did not do a good job.
I don't know that I've ever even seen
this one actually has, like I said, this has a good premise. It sounds interesting on the face. It sounds more like a Star Trek episode, so
and
I see that.
Spoiler alert, terrible movie, and Data dies.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
So, Data... like,
maybe that's why I haven't
seen this. A cheap-ass death, dude.
A cheap death, not worthy of the character. It's like they were trying to recreate the classic Spock death, but they did a terrible job and ended up slapping every Data fan in the face.
Shitty.
Give him a shitty, unfulfilling death. unworthy of the character. This movie, it had some promise, but unfortunately the end result sucks. So 3 out of 4 Next Generation movies are unfortunately dog shit.
Yep.
But that's not the end of the Star Trek movies, because later on, J.J. Abrams decided to take a crack at it.
Well, actually, what happened was they actually were pitched several TV show ideas, and then they went to J.J. Abrams and he said, let's actually do a movie. So in 2009, we have basically the relaunch of Star Trek as a movie instead of an actual TV series.
I want to say these movies are kind of a mixed bag for me. I think the casting was, by and large, terrific.
Good. Yep.
I think Chris Pine is an excellent Captain Kirk. I think Zachary Quinto is great as Spock. I don't know. Carl Urban, great as Dr. McCoy. Simon Pegg's great Scotty. Yep. I don't know the Uhura and Sulu people's names, but they were good.
They're good in the movies.
And then that poor...
Zoe Saldana is her name.
There we go. And then that poor dead fuck is... Chekhov.
Yeah, he's dead.
He's dead.
Killed by an SUV.
Killed by a fucking SUV that he forgot to park.
There was a lot of backlash against this movie when it came out because it doesn't feel... I mean, it takes the characters, so the characters feel familiar, but...
We're just going to discuss the entire trilogy.
Yeah.
So feel free to draw anything from any of them.
I mean, the structure doesn't feel like Star Trek. It's definitely a centerpiece action film.
It is.
Maybe like they were trying to do with Insurrection. I just think they succeed a lot. I don't know. I liked the first movie, especially the first.
Well, I think Abrams really brought it back to more of like he brought like the 60s feel to it, but you actually it still feels modern. Like even though the ship like is a lot more practical effects, and I don't think it overly relies on special effects, which is you know a strength of Abrams, which he doesn't tend to use. I mean, yeah, he does the lens flare a lot, but he doesn't really overuse special effects in these movies. He uses them pretty much the right amount. The story, I feel, does work. They have some nostalgia pulls with, like, bringing back, you know, fucking Leonard Nimoy's old ass. I felt overall the movie was okay. It's not a great movie, but it's definitely entertaining and definitely watchable.
I feel I had pretty much with the first two films in this series, I had the same experience where I enjoyed it on the first watch and on a rewatch as like, this doesn't really hold up for me. So at least they got me to be entertained once. So whatever. The third film, I couldn't even get entertained
for the first run through.
J.J. Abrams gave the directing helm to some other guy.
Who sucked.
What was that one called again?
Beyond.
Beyond, okay.
It has a few good scenes in it, but it doesn't work.
There were some really interesting makeup effects and alien effects in Beyond.
There were.
And it probably deserved some Oscar recognition over Suicide Squad.
Yeah, that's right.
Visually, I feel all the movies visually have been great. I just feel like the story was lacking in Beyond. It just felt boring. It didn't really go anywhere. You kind of just felt like you drudged through this film. And you're like, okay.
I just think that shininess factor has worn off of the idea of younger versions of all these characters, and the flaws of sticking with that for too long is starting to show through, like it does in any series.
Well,
longer they go on, usually the worse they get.
Yeah. I think they were cast well, but I don't think they were given the best stories. I mean, the first one is okay. It has its own kind of story.
The second one has a strong story.
The second
story.
One is a rehash of Wrath of Khan.
That's why it's the strongest story, I feel.
I don't like Benedict Cumberbatch's Khan as much as I like the other guy. I forget his name. Beyond, I don't know. Beyond just sucked. But, you know, the cast is good.
Which one do you feel was the best one of them? I feel Into Darkness was probably the best one.
I probably like the second one the best.
But, yet again, that was the most derivative one that they made. Yeah. You know,
I mean, I probably enjoyed the first one on the first watch more than I enjoyed the second one.
I would agree with that. Actually, the first watch there that me and TJ, when we went to the theater in, like, 2009 when it came out, that was probably the best, the most hyped one. I really enjoyed it. But, like you said, it doesn't hold up to subsequent viewings.
Sure.
It's not really related. I see a few people in the comments wanting us to talk about the Orville, so I'll just go ahead and say I've watched the first season of the Orville. I think it's a great show. I think, to me, it harkens back to the elements of the Next Generation, and it's really kind of a Next Generation clone.
I feel Seth MacFarlane really understands the Star Trek universe.
I think he understands Star Trek better than the people who made Discovery do, but I haven't seen Discovery, so maybe I'm wrong on that.
Well, yeah, I'm withholding judgment on Discovery. I mean, I feel like it's divided a lot of Star Trek fans. I say let's see it. I personally want to see it, and I'm waiting for that to kind of make my judgment call.
I'll make my mind up. I'll watch a few episodes of it.
Yeah.
I need to get on this Star Trek shit, because, you know, I didn't stick with the series like you guys did. I kind of bailed after the Next Generation. And
you know, I could just give you a, like I did with Rick and Morty, I could just give you a sampling of episodes that I think really stand
well,
out.
Well, you know.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
I think that'd be a good idea. And also, I think we, you know, want to finally do our long-awaited DS9 watch-through, because we've all seen, you know, TOS, or enough of TOS and TNG. So Paul's never seen Deep Space Nine. Kind of give you the newbie perspective, just kind of review every episode.
Yeah, I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, let's see.
I guess, did you pull anything about, I guess while we're on the topic of the movies, about fucking Tarantino?
No, I actually didn't pull anything about Tarantino.
I guess we could mention it real quick.
Yeah, that is a rumor, I actually though. Have a few little clips that we didn't get to, if you want to take a look at
some
of these.
Yeah, let's take a look at those.
I'll just introduce these in order here.
Sure.
I don't know why I felt compelled to pull this scene, but I think it's just a cool scene. This is not it.
Yeah, that's just a picture of the cast.
Computer, estimate the time from this location to Starbase 416 at Warp 9.
Inquiries regarding command functions are no longer accepted from your present location.
Good.
Computer, establish a security code for access to all functions previously transferred to Bridge.
Enter code.
173-46-73-21-476 Charlie 32-789-777-643 Tango 732 Victor 731-1788-732-476-789-76-4376 Lock.
Security code intact for all specified inquiries and orders.
Computer, initiate cascade.
That
sequence.
Clip is called the most secure security data. Code ever.
Yeah, dude. You'd have to be Data to remember that and use it.
Hey, do you guys want to see a conversation from the Next Generation that was actually banned in Ireland?
Sure.
For a number of years?
I'm finding it difficult to understand many aspects of Ansata conduct. Much of their behavioral norm would be defined by my program as unnecessary and unacceptable.
By my program as well, Data.
But if that is so, Captain, why are their methods so often successful? I've been reviewing the history of armed rebellion, and it appears that terrorism is an effective way to promote political change.
Yes, it can be, but I have never subscribed to the theory that political power flows from the barrel of a gun.
Yet there are numerous examples when it was successful. The independence of the Mexican state from Spain, the Irish unification of 2024,
and the Texas
rebellion.
Yes, I'm aware of them.
Then would it be accurate to say that terrorism is acceptable when all options for peaceful settlement have been foreclosed?
Data, these are questions that mankind has been struggling with throughout history. Your confusion is only human.
The Irish reunification?
Yeah, of 2025 or whatever the fuck it was.
No, totally offensive.
Never happened.
This was banned in Ireland. They were like, nope.
Nope, you're not going to talk
those,
about that.
Don't give those fuckers any ideas.
Wow.
Interesting little conversation there, especially in light of how terrorism is one of the top issues of the day. I don't know if they would get away with this conversation.
I'm not sure.
Now.
Yeah, because, I mean, Data's not making the typical argument you hear about terrorism. He's, like, saying, isn't terrorism kind of effective, ultimately?
Yeah, they hadn't been established. I mean, terrorists were bad back then, but they weren't the boogeymen that they are now. So I don't even know if, yeah, your average viewing public would appreciate.
I mean, honestly,
a show delving into something like
with
this.
Star Trek, you know, they kind of, really, especially TNG, really ahead of its time. I mean, TOS too. I mean, a lot of these shows kind of feel like they've been, you know, except for Enterprise and the later ones, were kind of groundbreaking.
Well, one of the things we really didn't get into too much during this show is just the weird social issues that Star Trek has taken on. Episodes about homosexuality well before that was a mainstream thing you could talk about. I know they did it with, you know, metaphors and stuff, but, you know, obviously there was a lot of things that addressed racism in the original series when racism was still very much an institution in America. Still is, according to some people. Drugs, you know.
Addiction. Addiction's
classism,
a big theme.
Classism.
Yep.
War. Colonialism.
Imperialism, yeah.
All kinds of shit. I mean,
I think that's what makes it brilliant. It looks at all these kind of current problems through a lens of a society that has, you know, achieved its pinnacle in terms of like dealing with one another and exploring space and being conscious and conservative about things. And it shows us, you know, how they fucking struggled to come up with answers for those things. And in some cases it shows us what the answer is. In some cases, like this clip we just watched, it shows us that they're still struggling.
Yeah, they don't have
to
all the
answer some of those things.
Yeah, they don't have all the answers, and it's interesting to look at through that lens of like even when they kind of feel like the Federation has its answer, it doesn't try to force that answer upon these other cultures. It's just more observing what they're going to do, and sometimes helping them, but a lot of times having to stay out of it and say, well, we have to remain neutral because we can't really interfere with the natural progression of your culture and society.
This next clip is, I'll just play it.
I do not understand how to use this door.
Try that again.
Well, I guess.
Yeah. Just walk in a circle, guys. Maybe get out on the back end.
Try reversing it.
I think it's like a magic door.
Whatever.
The summer sunlight, the howling at night, the blood of friends spilled on the sand.
Hey, Paul.
Yes.
A what am I looking at here?
Death. This is a Trekkie singing a song, breath, a Klingon
and
wedding
as I
song
cling
or something.
To her hand, mere mortals you be, the truth you can see, you think you have.
Maybe they need to hire Steven Seagal to sing for them.
I don't know what's going on.
I'm not really sure.
That's a beautiful rendition of a Klingon folk song, and I don't know why you guys are shitting on her for singing it.
I would not classify that as a beautiful rendition of anything.
She has a beautiful, deep, baritone voice.
A beautiful monotone voice.
All right.
I am singing a song.
I have nothing else to play as far as that goes. I guess that pretty much explores it pretty... there's obviously... You could go in a lot more depth on this
subject. And we probably will go into greater depth, in regards to, we kind of just scratched the surface of Star Trek. There's TNG. There's the actual series themselves. There's the movies. There's a lot more we can get into, but we kind of just scratched the surface for you guys.
We went through... some of the major themes of Star Trek and discussed the series and all of the films.
Got to see Captain Kirk swap and slobber with Uhura.
Yeah.
Mm.
A lot of good shit. Thank you guys for tuning in. If you liked it, give it a thumbs up. Maybe I'll take a look at what the chat's saying and see if there's anything they would like. Since we're here live, I might as well turn my attention to these fuckers for a second.
See what they want.
See what's going on in the chat's little
brain.
What's going
on in the fucking chat, dude?
It's
going
to take them a while to catch up. I think we're about a minute behind. So
you'll see. Cucks! Autist! Dog shit! Bad!
Boo, boo,
boo! Boo, hate you! Die, die, die!
Wow. It's like you're reading it.
This was trash.
Cool.
And then another person, this was funny as hell. All right.
Wow.
Hopefully most people are fall somewhere in between those two.
Nah, dude, I like that polarization.
Hopefully more towards
the fucking sucks.
As long as they're both watching.
TJ, go die. All right.
TJ, go die. TJ, go die. Scotty, go die. Paul, you can live.
Paul, cure my depression.
Good luck with that.
He cannot save you. He can't even save himself. Oh, shit. Now they're really fucking writing shit. He'll see. If you're reading this, it means we forgot to change the default description. Yeah.
We know.
We'll change it after this goes live.
After this goes live?
I mean, like, after it...
Uploads.
You know what I'm saying?
After it uploads. Yeah, TJ, you fucking chode.
This was nice. You were very energetic, guys. Well, thank you.
High energy.
Malcolm X versus MLK. That might be a good one.
Versus?
Yeah.
Cool.
In Mortal Kombat.
Cross-dresser Paul. Was that you, Paul?
I don't... was it me?
This was funny as trash. There's cool. Someone, there's someone in the middle.
Yeah, funny as trash.
Where is Hugo and Jake? Hopefully they're going to join us on Friday, next Friday.
Because fucking Skype sucks.
We had some trouble with Skype. That's why the show was
late.
We're
going to test some other shit out.
We're trying to make it work.
Yeah.
Paul, go answer some more AMA questions. All right. Paul will be on the fucking subreddit, the Deep Fat Fried subreddit, answering your retarded questions later.
Sure.
Thank you guys for tuning in to our Star Trek episode. And that's pretty much it.
And that concludes the Autist Hour with Paul, Scotty, and TJ.
Good night, everybody.
Dun, 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 dun.